everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure their mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and the use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussion of in-committee items. Members of the public and press must refrain from using the instant messaging facility during the meeting, and anyone found to be doing so will be given a warning. Failure to adhere to the guidelines for a second time will result in being removed from the meeting. I remind councillors of their obligations under Councillors' Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interest which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber or hang up from the call for the duration of the discussion on that item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. The proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. The recording equipment is linked to the microphone system on the computer, so please ensure your microphone is switched on before speaking. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Please ensure that if you wish to speak on an item, either in the chamber or via Teams, use the chat facility to indicate you wish to speak, and I will bring members in as listed on the chat. I remind members to keep their instant messages to the following letters. Type Q if you want to ask a question, C for comment, P for propose, or S for second. Please refrain from making any comments using instant messaging. If you need to leave the meeting early, please indicate via chat facility so that we are aware that this is an active decision, does not indicate connectivity problems. Okay, you're very welcome, everybody, this evening. Tonight we have Grainne Long, John McCartan and Liam Gunn with us from the Housing Executive. And first of all, item number two would be any declarations of interest?
None.
Okay. So item number three is the Northern Ireland Housing Executive Housing Investment Plan 2022. And I believe, Grainne, you're going to take us through your presentation. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, and thank you for the opportunity to present it to you. As you know, the Housing Executive's Housing Investment Plan is a very important document because it outlines the investment that the Housing Executive is making in the council area, but it's also a very important document because it outlines the partnership and the level of partnership between my organisation, the Housing Executive, and council. And in being your community planning partner, that's a responsibility and a partnership that we take really, really seriously. So what I want to cover in the course of about 10 minutes, and very happy to take questions afterwards, is just to outline the scale, the nature of that investment locally, some of the achievements that we've made as partners in the last while, and where our focus is going to be in the future, and I suppose some of the challenges as well that are ahead. So thanks, Sarah. Move on to the next slide. And again, I hardly need to tell you, as our partner, I mean, our whole focus of community planning from a housing perspective is about essentially supporting you and working alongside you in delivering the community plan for the council area. We've taken key leadership roles in some of the subcommittees, particularly the Living Well Together community plan. And in fact, last year, Mari, myself and colleagues across council area worked together as part of a housing need conference, which we had at the end of last year. And really, it was far more than just a conference, because what it did was focus, I suppose, all of everyone's attention on the work that's ongoing and on some of the real achievements we've been making in terms of investing locally in new social housing, in new build, ramping up the level of new build and building on that. Because, as I say, there's a lot of work to do, and the gap between demand and supply is wider than any of us would want it to be. So there's a lot of work to do, but I think genuinely is the case that both organisations, I think, are working really well together, and I think we're constantly identifying either new sites, unblocking barriers, and I suppose housing and planning working very, very effectively and well together, as we should do. Thank you. So just in terms of the numbers then, and to show you what we're providing and the level of investment ongoing locally. And so last year, 21-22, the Housing Executive invested just over 30 million locally, and that was through a combination of new build social housing, which is seeing green, planned maintenance in terms of our own stock and our stock improvements, hugely important area. And obviously then in supporting people, any of you who know the importance of having housing, secure, affordable accommodation is critical, but many people also need the housing support services to go with it. And so supporting people's funding of over 6 million is hugely important in terms of keeping people in their homes, keeping them in the community, and ensuring that they can live a full and independent life. And that's what that funding is for, and a range of other funds there, as you can see. For this year and the forthcoming year, again, a very, very healthy level of investment locally. And we haven't included the new build social housing. We don't ever calculate that until the end of the year. So I'll be adding on to that figure of 27 million. But what you'll see for the year we're in is a very, very healthy level of investment in our own stock and that planned maintenance and stock improvements. And that's hugely important. I hardly need to tell any of you, given the scale of the energy crisis and the cost of living crisis for our tenants, the people who live in our homes. And so getting that investment into people's homes, ensuring stock improvements is really important. And that's why we are really trying to scale up as much as we can in terms of getting investment delivered. And also on the response side, and that's the pale blue, making sure that our response maintenance is being delivered. And you'll see a very, very high level of investment in supporting people. And I think we will see, I mean, I'm seeing it all the time, I'm sure you are too, the level of demand for services from people, whether it's for people with disabilities needing support to stay in their own homes, whether it's people who are homeless, experiencing homelessness locally, and the whole range of services that are needed. So I think we'll continue to see a very challenging year in that respect. Just in terms of the breakdown, and many of you will know this, but there's the breakdown of the numbers. So 68,000 homes across the council area, and just over 5,000 of those housing executive properties. And you can see the mix there between home ownership or owner occupation, the private rented sector, and the very large role that the private rented sector continues to play in meeting housing need, and obviously then social housing stock and housing executive and housing associations locally. I think probably this slide tells the story that we're all only too familiar with, which is the growth in the number of applications to the housing waiting list, and also then within that, those households that are in housing stress, and that upward trend in the last number of years that we're seeing not just here, but we're seeing that across all council areas, really. But, you know, very high levels of housing need. And alongside that, a reduction in the number of new allocations that we're able to make. What that effectively says is there's no headroom in the system, that we, you know, we've got to keep building new social housing at scale and as quickly as we can, because actually our own stock continue to deplete through the house sale scheme, but also just the level of new tenancies that are coming forward or homes that are being freed up is reducing as well. So that's why, as I say, that focus on new build is so important. In terms of some of the challenges locally, my colleagues, John and Liam, who you will know, no doubt, some of the challenges locally, many of them, I mean, very similar to other areas, and one being an ageing population. And of course, that's a success story. That's a good news story. 20% of the population will be over 65 by 2030. And that's, you know, that's a healthy population. And it does mean we need to think very differently, though, about how people live in their homes, the design of those homes, not just internally, but also the external fabric of the homes and the surrounding environments of those homes. So there's a big challenge for all of us, I think, in ensuring that our population, our older people, have what they need, both in terms of the type of homes, but also the support that they need. And that's why I think supporting people funding is really important, but also those partnerships locally. And I suppose as your partner, I suppose what we constantly think about is, you know, every penny that we spend in our stock is about keeping people healthy as well, and that's critically important. So that investment in stock, to increasing health and well-being and reducing poverty and inequality, hugely important. I think the other issue that, you know, I think is obvious is the level of housing stress, and that continues to grow, unfortunately, and we've seen that continuing to grow, and that's a real challenge, I think, for all of us, the scale and the nature of housing stress and the profile of that, given the low number of allocations. And I suppose providing those housing solutions, continuing to do that while demand continues to grow. And then, as you would all know, given what you're experiencing locally, just that growth in homelessness locally. So just to give you an example of why that's the case, I mean, during COVID, we saw a reduction in the number of hostel places, for example, because of the restrictions applied during the pandemic. We also saw a growth in the number of people who would previously have been known as hidden homeless, who had informal arrangements, they were sofa surfing, who needed accommodation and needed it urgently. And that obviously happened overnight. And then that overnight stop in the churn that normally happens in the housing market and within our own allocation. So all of that led to a massive bottleneck and a massive increase in demand for homelessness, which we've continued to see. And we continue to see that happening. In fact, we're seeing more and more people presenting as homeless because they're losing their tenancy in the private rented sector. And you may well be seeing this coming through in terms of your own work locally. So as a result, in this council area alone, we made 521 placements in temporary accommodation, which is really unprecedented in terms of the scale and the nature of demand. And I think what we're seeing and what the team certainly is seeing locally is a huge challenge in sourcing temporary accommodation, suitable temporary accommodation that we are content to place people. And I'm sure that's an issue that that I hardly need to tell you. I think you're very familiar with that. So on to, I suppose, the solutions and what we want to do more of. Again, and part of the reason I think, the partnership between this council and the Housing Executive, I think, is really starting to yield results is because we've been working together for a long time now on ways in which we can drive up new social housing development locally, whether it's through identifying sites, unlocking barriers that are there, and really working very closely together. Last year, 105 new social homes completed, but importantly, a very healthy programme. And I think that's the key, 500 homes on site and a healthy number of those being wheelchair accessible. But I think you all know, and no doubt know this only too well, the future housing requirements that are needed over the next 5 years and why that program and the performance of the program is so important, and why we're spending so much time, I think, as partners identifying new sites and identifying every possible opportunity to grow the program. Thank you. And I suppose then just a couple of final points before I finish. I think cost of living crisis is front of mind for all of us. And I suppose I will always reiterate the point that the Housing Executive is the Home Energy Conservation Authority for Northern Ireland. So we provide an energy advice service that's available to everyone, irrespective of their tenure. So again, I always encourage councillors to be aware of that, be aware of that service. Please refer people to us. And that service is available free, independent energy advice. And we will also signpost members of the public to other services, whether it's our own services, affordable warmth and boiler replacement programmes for people living in the private sector. And again, that's, affordable warmth is something we receive referrals from councils on a regular basis. And again, I always urge councillors when I meet council members, be aware what the programme is, if there's anything we can do to build either your knowledge or of those programmes, or indeed to support referrals, then that's what we're here to do. And I suppose to finish up then on, I suppose, the direction of travel for my own organisation, I suppose a number of areas of focus for us. First of all, on sustainable development, we will be investing and continue to invest heavily in retrofits and retrofit programme and in energy efficiency for homes. And I think that's ever important given the energy crisis we're in. The Minister made an announcement 18 months ago that it's her intention to enable the Housing Executive to borrow against our rental income, and that's to invest in our homes and to add to new supply. And we're on course, working very closely with the Department to do that. And we hope to be in a position to do that from 2025 onwards. And that, I think, would really strengthen our ability to add to new supply locally. And we'd certainly want to do that. I think as an organisation that invests heavily in our own stock, we want to extract social value from that. So that means where we can, delivering through apprenticeships and building skills and local supply chains. And our hope and our intention is to spend $200 million this year in our homes. And that does mean, I hope, significant investment locally as well. And I suppose the final points for us, the real focus, and that's needed, and every opportunity I get to make the case, is that, we need to be spending much more on prevention of homelessness this year. We're still very much in emergency mode post-COVID. And while our budget for homelessness will probably end up being around 18 million, unfortunately, we're only spending about $500,000 on prevention. And I think that shows, that's not the right balance. We want to be investing early on and spending on prevention so that, the problem is solved much, much early on. So, Chair, I think that's enough for me. I think I've just about hit the 10-minute mark, slightly over, and very happy myself and my colleagues here to take questions.
Well, Grainne, thanks very much. It was great to see you here tonight. And, as somebody who would have proposed the symposiums that we've had over the last number of years, I think it would be great value in trying to see before the terms over this year to have another follow-up and build on what's been done. I think the more we keep on top of things and continue to build those relationships, so potentially we could look at that. I have just one small point before I bring members in. It was just the issue around the place shaping team. I've had a couple of small developments in the Newry area whereby we've had commitments from the place shaping team, and that has led to the landowners bringing in contractors ready to go, and whenever they're sitting down then with the housing association, they're getting feedback that they're at capacity, despite the fact that I would have had written and they would have had written confirmation that they would support the scheme. Mm-hmm. Now, these are small schemes, you're talking 10 or a dozen houses, so I might want to catch up with you again on those, because I see when you're looking at those numbers, these are maybe 3-bedroom homes. Yes, maybe they're not in as big a demand as the 2 beds, but I still think in those numbers that there's need for 3-bed houses in the greater Newry area, but it's just something you need to flag that if there's commitments given there, there's the landowners and the developers and the contractors involved have gone down a process of spending a lot of money to get the site ready in anticipation that whenever the housing association goes, they're going to get the nod to proceed based on commitments are there. So I might need to take that one up with you. Yeah. Charlie, Casey, you've indicated first. Charlie.
Yeah, thanks very much, Chair. Well, thanks, Grania, for your gallop through that presentation there. I'm sure it is available to us anyway at the end of the day. But it's hard for you, for the executive. I was on the board of housing executive for a number of years myself, and I know the difficulties that a housing executive have with diminishing budgets and stuff like that. But even taking that into consideration, it's important that you do deliver a reasonably good service that makes the people feel happy and content. But I have a number of issues, Grania, to be quite honest. I've no issue with the local staff in Newry. I have to say they're very, very helpful. And they go out of their way to return calls and return emails and stuff like that. So top quality staff you have in Newry, I have to say that. But a couple of things. General maintenance, for a start off. I mean, some of the maintenance groups that you have working for you now, they're just not stepping up to the mark. I don't know, are they all going out to tender again, or have they been tendered for? Because some of the stories I'm hearing are basically horror stories. I mean, a group sent out to repair a roof and they don't have a roofer with them. The guy puts a ladder up and sticks kitchen roll under a leaking tile on the roof and think that that will solve the problem. That's only one. And a couple of things with my colleague Liz Timmons had been dealing with. A tenant in Dominic Street. She had this tenant had reported significant issues with damp and mould, which resulted in her child acquiring numerous respiratory issues, including frequent chest infections. Now, that lady has been very frustrated in recent times that the work has been promised to be done and not being done. So, I mean, numerous contractors have called out, but nothing is being done, and this person in Dominic Street feels very, very upset and annoyed that nothing's happening. Another one is a scheme that was to start in Ardcharn for replacing windows. Now, I know there's an issue with during the COVID prices have increased and for materials, but the fact remains is that the people are living in terrible conditions. Windows need replaced. And there's a lady on to me even today that she's something like 8 windows in the house, and the glass is falling out of the windows, the wood's falling apart with dampness. And she suffers from respiratory problems as well because of it. So when is that going to be addressed? When is the executive going to take that by the scruff of the neck and get that sorted out? Now, grass cutting, Grania, this is something I always raised when I was on the housing council. Cutting grass and leaving the grass just lying there. And I know there isn't a budget to lift it, but it should be done. It's a shame and disgrace to let the grass grow to about 2 or 3 foot and they just cut it, and it's carried across the doorsteps with children throwing it here, there, everywhere, carrying it in the door, carpets destroyed, and places like that. And I'll finish on one last point. Entryways is another bone of contention with me. Entryways that are in the ownership of the housing executive, never, ever maintained to a reasonable standard. That's something that needs to be addressed. Thanks.
Thanks, Charlie. Just on that point, I'll take a few and then come back in. But just on that point of Ardcarn, I had the same issue. I think we were supposed to be looking at, was it July that was supposed to start that scheme, but it hasn't. But we'll come to that again. Charlie, I'll take a few more and then I'll get them to come back to you on your points that you've raised. Alan, can you come in with yours, please?
Thank you, Chair. Yes, it was just to thank the housing executive for a very thorough presentation. There's a lot of info there which you can hopefully use. It was I ask that you had mentioned about the houses being sold scheme. It was to see how many houses that the housing executive would lose to that every year, how many were being sold off from our stock. And the second question was to check if the blockage on planning coming from the Northern Ireland water is impacting anywhere that you guys would be seeking to build. I'm thinking of in particular the Dundrum, which is inside Slieve Croagh, but there could be all the other sort of places across the district, and just to get a sense of how that's in packing you, please.
Yeah, Terry, I'll bring you in then. We'll go to get some answers in those questions. Terry, go ahead.
Thanks very much, Chair. First of all, Grania, nice to see you again. It's been a while. And also, to Liam and all, you're very welcome. And thank you very much for your presentation and overall summary of the report. And you mentioned about working in tandem with the housing associations and the likes of new builds and all, but I know recently powers were transferred over to housing executive again to build properties and all, and I think it's a long overdue move. And I know I would say the housing executive were pioneers in delivering social housing, but you know, I just want to know, has the housing executive taken into consideration the current housing stock that's in the possession? Also, I know a lot of houses that we've been in possession with when it's built in the late 50s and 60s, whenever the disability awareness wasn't really, you know, at the forefront of developments. But I'm just wondering, have you taken into account, or have you any plans in place to bring up, bring forward proposals and to build in for more houses, etc. And I think I support all that you do, and also in relation to maintenance schemes, etc. In the Rowallan area, I'm just wondering, would it be possible for an update on schemes that are ongoing and completion dates as well? But that's enough for me. But I'd like to thank and welcome back Liam, and also my heartfelt appreciation to Brona and all at Down Patrick at the end for all their help and going the extra mile to help anytime you contact them. And Neil Andrews is by way no relation, but Neil and except I must find them, they're always very helpful and would go the extra mile to help out. So that's a comment and to yourself about the staff you have in Down Patrick.
Okay, Terry, thank you. Folks, do you want to come back on some of those issues that are raised?
Very happy to. I'll cover some of the general points and then maybe hand over to Liam as well and John as necessary. So I suppose just on the issue around place shaping and capacity, certainly I'm happy to take that up, Michael, and follow up with you on that point. Yes, I mean, in terms of our planned maintenance and response maintenance, I suppose I deal with them both separately. On planned maintenance, there's no question, and I've been quite public about this, that since COVID, and particularly in the months since COVID and the economic headwinds we faced, ensuring that our contracts work effectively and deliver continues, but it is extremely challenging, and our contracting partners are facing upward costs, significant inflationary costs, as well as challenges in terms of accessing labour supply locally as well as regionally. We've about 130 contracts. The vast majority of those work very well, but there's no doubt. And there are always instances where contractors don't perform. We have very, very clear and strict and stringent targets that contractors must meet. All contracts are managed locally and they're managed effectively, and we have monthly meetings with all contractors, and in fact, and of course we do undertake inspections across the programme. So if there are individual instances where contractors are not performing, then I always want to hear about them. So I'm very happy for councillors to follow up directly with myself or John or Liam and the team, because that, you know, that's information we would want to have. There are some delays, there's no doubt there's some delays in the programme, and there has been some backlog in the programme for a whole range of reasons since COVID and through that. And I think, you know, you've seen some of the public discussions in relation to one particular contract, which is a planned maintenance contract that we have in place, which we are still discussing ways in which we can apply uplifts to contracts. We have to do that in the right way, however, so contractors must demonstrate to us that those uplifts, they need to be able to give us compelling evidence of uplifts. And if they can do that and do it in the right way, then of course, where we can through the contract, we will apply uplifts. That is taking some time, and that is, there is no question that is leading to some delays, but not across all of the programme and not in relation to all contracts. So I'm speaking in general terms, and I'm very happy that you follow up in relation to specific issues. On the point about grass cutting, I'm aware of the issues locally. I mean, you raised them last year. We certainly have had an issue with one of the contractors that we're seeking to resolve. I'm sure Liam will want to touch on that in a bit more detail. And I'm also very conscious, and we've been focusing on the issue of entry rates locally as well. And there has been some successes there. But again, Liam might want to take that up. On the points around the house sale scheme, yes, I'm afraid I don't have the numbers for this council area, but we sell approximately 500 homes a year under the house sales scheme, and so what that effectively means is, you know, the net effect of that is that last year regionally 1900 homes were commenced in Northern Ireland, and we sold 500, so you end up with a net effect of 1400 homes. So, you know, it is without question having an impact. The fact that we have to sell our own stock of course is going to contribute actually to housing need. On the point you make about Northern Ireland Water, yes, we have housing associations in terms of new build are impacted by constraints through Northern Ireland Water. We meet with them on a regular basis. I have to say, to be fair to them, they are trying to undertake a number of design-led solutions where wastewater capacity is constraining new development. And so we work very closely with Northern Ireland Water to try and unpick some of those challenges. But I think, you know, ultimately what is needed there is longer term investment, I guess. And I suppose the final point I would make, it's not the case yet that the Housing Executive has been given powers to build again. That it were so. We're on the horse to doing it. I hope that we will be there by 2025. But certainly it would be our intention that as and when we are in a position to build, that we would want to build to a range of standards, including net zero, or as close to net zero as we can, but also ensuring that homes are as close to lifetime homes, and ensuring that we're meeting needs of people with a range of disabilities. John or Liam, is there anything that I haven't covered that you want to?
Just a comment back firstly. Thanks for Councillor Casey's comments there in relation to some of the maintenance issues. I am aware of that particular case that you cited there, Councillor Casey, in relation to Dominic Street there. And absolutely, there's been a very lengthy delay there in resolving that issue. Through the mechanisms within the contract at the minute, we're looking to get that work to an adjacent contractor in order to complete that, and discussions around that are ongoing, and we would hope to be on site fairly soon to resolve that. In regard to the double glazing scheme in Ardcairn, that again is caught up in the whole contractor materials costs issues and the rest of it. Colleagues in asset management within the Housing Executive informed me today there's discussions ongoing at the minute in terms of resolving those issues with a view to getting on site within this financial year. So there has been delays, Chair, as you quite rightly say, but we are hopeful that we'll get that scheme on site sometime in this financial year, and I'll certainly update whenever we have a firm start date for that. Just touching on the grass cutting issues again, hands up, absolutely, there have been issues. That's resulted in the subcontractor employed having his contract discontinued. We now have a new contractor in. I was on site last week in Uri around some of these long-standing issues with our grounds manager, Neil Andrews. And again, any issues come to light, please let me know. And in conjunction with the grounds maintenance supervisor and the contractor, we'll certainly pick up on those issues. Just coming in there on Councillor Lewis's comments there, I think locally there might have been around 21 house sales within South Down area last year. You know, so that's 21 units lost through the scheme, Councillor Lewis. And in terms of Councillor Andrew's comments in relation to disability issues in homes and the rest of it, we would have a very healthy adaptations programme ongoing here within our own stock. And in terms of identification of new build, one of the things that we always factored in would be purpose-built accommodation for specific families with needs, that one of the discussions we'll have with housing associations will be not only to provide general needs accommodation, but also to provide purpose-built for specific cases to take account of their needs. Some of the processes can be quite long, but ultimately they will get there, you know, and get resolution. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, Liam, thanks very much. I'm going to take in Gareth, Valerie and Willie next. So, Gareth?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I don't want to single out any particular person on the housing executive, but we do have to single out Bruna McGarry, and so we do, because firstly, the work that she's done within the model farm area over the last number of months, you know, is outstanding, and her contribution needs to be particularly recorded, and hopefully she's got her appraisal coming up soon enough that I'll feed into it. But look, I suppose there's a couple of general questions that I had. Concerning new builds, and we've touched on it in some particular areas, but from a Downpatrick DEA perspective, you know, yes, we have the old down being built by Clanmill, and there's going to be 100 plus houses, which will be great for Downpatrick. But then you go across the Blakeel coast, you've got the likes of Strangford, where a family on a low income can't even get a house because either there's no stock in it, we haven't built social housing in the area in 15 years, as I was told today by one of the builders. Then you go over to Killock, you know, similarly again, there's a lot of private dwellings being built, and Liam will know Killock as well as me. You know, and a private tenant even spoke to me a couple of weeks ago where her rent has went from £500 to £650 overnight. And that's just not affordable. You know, herself working, her husband trying to work, you know, £650 is a lot to be asked to pay for. So there does need. So the question around that is, we're talking about new builds. How are we going to address the rural areas where, you know, for some people it may not be so popular because, you know, you're not in the town, you're not in the buzz, but then there's a lot of families out there that do want to live where they've grown up but just can't afford to live in the area. You touched on homelessness, and I helped a family over the summer who had been evicted from their property because the landlord was selling it. And it actually stressed me out. And, you know, that's not saying that's not right, but, you know, it's my job to help the constituents as much as possible. But it was very stressful in the housing executive and the approach that was taken. You know, I rang up, I forget the gentleman's name, and I spoke to him, explained, and I says, you know, this family, she's a single mother of three children, being evicted, she's sofa surfing at the moment, and yous have offered her nothing. And obviously, if he's making an offer of property and she rejects it, you don't have to do anything for 40 days, as far as I remember. But for her and her three children, one with autism, you know, the questions come now. This is, what readily stock does the housing executive have within the South Down area for families that are in that situation? What is the turnaround that you have to quickly get someone into temporary accommodation until they can be found a permanent home? So that's the question I have around that. What is the stock? And then the last point that I want to make, there's a lady that was in a private property, successfully got a housing executive property, and whenever she was about to be handed over the keys, the house was not ready. You know, it wasn't fit to live in. There was work that wasn't fully completed. The contractor had done what he was meant to have done and then went away, and that was it. And then I contacted the housing executive and he's had to get the contractors back out. Is there a process as part of whenever a tenant's moving into the property that you review it, say, yes, it's fit for you to move in? And why has that? Why was there a gap there? Why was that not picked up in that part of the process? So just a couple of points.
Thanks, Gareth. Valerie?
Thanks, Michael. Thanks, Grainne, for your presentation. It's a very detailed report. I've read through most of it. I have a couple of issues just to raise with you. One, I'll go along with Charlie on that on the grass cutting. Could you please tell your new contractor that there's sides to all these grass areas? He's cutting the middle bits, but he's forgetting that there's edges and sides to them. So I've had a few people on about what looks well, but what about the sides? So we need to get that one looked into. I totally agree with Gareth there on the social housing aspect and the cost of it. Like, you can live in a three-bedroom house in Newry, and it's £90 a week rent. You can live in a two-bedroom social house in Mayo Bridge, and it's nearly £160 a week rent. So social housing definitely is not affordable housing, and I think that seriously, seriously needs to be looked at. The one big issue I have at the moment is, and I have a lot of people coming to me with this one, you're talking, Grainne, about your energy efficiency. In the housing executive at the minute, the form of heating that you propose for most of your tenants is gas heating. And you take away, in instances, you have taken the chimneys and that, etc., away from the houses. So the only form of heating in these homes is gas heating. At the minute, gas, the price of gas heating is extortionate. I myself have gas heating, and I've just done a wee survey over the past 36 hours. In the past 36 hours, I have had my gas heating system on for 5 hours. That was 3.5 hours of heat and 1.5 hours of hot water. And that used 5 units of gas. Now, this is only the month of September. So far in this month, I will have used nearly £300 in gas, and it's only September. So what is the cost we're going to be by January, February? We need to think, for you to think on this one, that I know it's probably too late for people who have gas and who have had their chimneys and that removed, that you either give them the option to keep their oil and still maintain it, and that until this crisis is over, or you allow them to keep their open fire as well as their gas. And I know you will say you provide a focal fire in their living room. A focal fire runs off electricity and also costs quite an amount of money to run. That's all my issues.
Thanks, Valerie. Willie?
Thanks, Chair. Thanks very much, Grainne, for the presentation. And I also want to put on record my thanks to Liam, Brona and the team. They are all always very helpful. They always get back. It mightn't be the news you want, but they get back as quick as they can. So I'd like to thank them for that. I suppose, like other members, a big issue is interim housing or temporary accommodation. And there's a massive shortfall in our areas. There is other districts as well. You know, you have the situation, vulnerable residents, you know, sleeping with friends and sleeping in cars. As somebody else said, they're sofa surfing. You know, it is a chronic situation. And I'm just wondering, is there anything council can assist in regards to helping with temporary accommodation, or talking, you know, with partners, you know, or other organisations from the voluntary sector, you know, about providing temporary accommodation. It links into the other point about, you know, the high cost in the private market. You know, a two-bedroom unit, roughly about £800-£850 in Newcastle, in the private sector. Well beyond the reach of somebody, you know, on low incomes. And also then the evictions that are taking place, you know, on a regular basis. We're getting that. I would get it regularly on a daily basis. The people have been requested to leave the home. Either they're going to sell the home or they're going to turn it into an Airbnb. There are the issues, and maybe tenants have been in a private accommodation maybe for 10 years, are facing this issue, and appreciate Deirdre Hargey did introduce, you know, a longer arrangement that people couldn't be evicted. But it's obviously having a chronic impact on the waiting list and people in housing stress. So, again, I'd be keen to hear from the housing executive, are they seeing this dramatic change in the housing market? Maybe for Liam, in regards to CCTV installation in the Bourndale and the Bracken Avenue flats, just maybe progress on where we're at in that, because there's a number of vacant flats in Bourndale and Bracken Avenue. People just won't accept them because of the drug dealing and the antisocial behaviour. So I think CCTV will go a long way to improve that situation. It'll not be the panacea, but it'll certainly be one component that will, you know, help make the accommodation safer. And we've made good stride, the housing executive made good stride progress in regards to the corner block of flats and Bourndale Park Road. And I suppose my point is about expanding that right throughout the Bourndale Park area. The wraparound services alongside the CCTV, I think, will have a very positive impact on that. Just is that going to happen? Is that going to be rolled out, Liam? The last point is in regards to the contractors on the select list, you know, for adaptations, renovations. The residents would tell me, you know, they're having great difficulty getting contractors. There's very few on the list who are willing to even accept to do the work. And I appreciate this tight margins. And again, the minister has allocated extra money because of the cost of living and the rise in building materials. How often is that select list refreshed? Or can a contractor be added at any stage? That's me, Chair. Thanks.
Thanks, Willie.
Thank you, Chair.
I'll
take some of these, and then Liam and John will come in on others. So I suppose if I started with rural housing need, and this is a critical priority for us, because we obviously every council that we present to, the vast majority of councils, indeed, are demanding of us on the issue of rural housing. We have a strategy on rural housing and a very clear aim in terms of increasing supply of rural housing. I've got figures in front of me in terms of this area, Castlewell and Crossgar, Across the Glen, Saintfield, Campbell, Ross Trevor and Ardglass, all highest areas of need. And so we've been doing a number of pieces of work in the last year in relation to identifying with Housing Help. First of all, working with housing associations to identify suitable sites, which is very difficult, as you know, and encouraging them obviously to buy off-the-shelf properties and where they can. We undertook a rural needs test within the district in Dara Cross, and actually that's one example that was so where there is sufficient response to the test, that, you know, and in this case it justified the inclusion of a small scheme in the programme, and that will now go ahead when a suitable site is identified by the housing association. So I think the first, you know, very strong focus for us is using housing need tests and using them well and using them locally, and that's the work that we've been undertaking within our place shaping team. My colleague Sinead Collins also on the call here tonight. The second piece then is undertaking site identification studies, which is what we've been doing, and working very closely with housing associations to identify a number of sites. And we've done that. A number of sites have been identified in Crossgar, and they'll be shared with housing associations in the next few months as we put the programme together for this year, beyond this year. So there is a lot of work ongoing in terms of focusing on rural housing, but the key focus needs to be identify and demonstrate needs alongside identification of those sites. And then anything that we can do, whether it's working with Northern Ireland Water, obviously whether it's working with council to unblock any other barriers, then we will do that. So that's a significant piece of work. It may well be that Sinead wants to come in further on that. I just wanted to touch on the issue of temporary accommodation. I mentioned it earlier when I was speaking. everybody has, a number of you have covered it tonight. You are absolutely right. The scale of demand for temporary accommodation is unprecedented. I haven't seen anything like it. And it is a direct result of COVID. You know the reasons, but we're not out the other side of it. And we're not out the other side because there has been no let up in demand, of course. And that's felt, you know, most obviously by the people that we serve, such as the cases that you've all raised this evening. And so there's a number of pieces of work that that are underway. I suppose to answer the question, where do we place people and what are the kinds of placements? I mean, again, in the last year, we've made 521 placements locally that will have been placements in terms of into our own hostels, housing executive hostels, placements into voluntary sector hostels, so our partners in the voluntary community sector, some placements only where we can and we must, and we really don't want to do this very often, but placements into hotels and bed and breakfasts. And again, we certainly don't want to be doing that for vulnerable households, including families, 44 to leased properties and 135 into single lets. So that will show you the spread of the types of different types of accommodation that we're doing. Even earlier this morning or today, I was meeting housing associations to talk to them about their voids and seeing if we can work with housing associations to bring forward voids. The voids in housing executive estates are very low. We deliberately keep them low. And where voids are, where we have voids, they would be for specific reasons. And it was mentioned earlier on where there is, for example, sometimes where there is issues, whether it's antisocial behaviour or whatever, and we will be managing that locally through local programmes. So there's a big piece of work ahead to keep bringing more temporary accommodation on site. The ideal for me is that I would have a multi-year budget. If I had a multi-year budget, then what I would want to do is to go out and lease accommodation over the long term, where we become the landlord and we are then responsible for the repairs and the maintenance and the upkeep of that property. That's really where I would like to take it. We're not currently in a position where we have a 3-year budget. I hope we're not too far from that. I hope when ministers return, we will get a 3-year budget, because then, as I say, that allows us to have a longer term partnership, whether it's with voluntary organisations or indeed with private landlords. Because the number of leases, you know, are really where we want to go. I'll ask Liam to come in, but I mean, I'm always very conscious. Change of tenancies, in other words, turning around a tenancy as quickly as possible. That's housing management. That's our job and that's our work. So when we hear instances of tenancies not being prepared and not being ready, again, we want to hear that and we want to hear those examples, because it is rare. I mean, we tend to be pretty good actually at change of tenancy. So I would imagine there's either been an instance where the contractor relationship has broken down, there's been a specific or unique issue there. So we'd want to hear more. Can I just, final point, and then I'll hand over to colleagues. On energy efficiency, you know, frankly, this is the only game in town. We have to retrofit 84,000 homes in the next 30 years. And councillor, you are right. You know, all of our dependency on whether it's gas or oil, you know, is only driving us towards unsustainable ways in which we heat our homes. But the first thing we must do as a landlord, is take a fabric first approach. So that means really good insulation. It means really good external wrapping buildings and making sure that external insulation as well as internal insulation is there. We're doing as many retrofits as we can, 1,900 across the region in the last 3 years. Not enough in this council area, I have to say, I'd be the first to say it, but we want to programme as much as we can. And we will, you know, so we're putting a lot of money into energy efficiency programmes. And that means taking a fabric first approach. It, you know, quite frankly, it is very difficult for me to comment on the issue of gas versus oil, because, I mean, all of the energy advice says, even though they are fossil fuels, you know, gas and a gas boiler is still the most efficient boiler. So I will leave it to others to provide advice on energy. But nevertheless, we are putting as much money as we can into energy efficiency this year. We will spend probably over 40 million on energy efficiency into our homes, which will go a long way to support those households who are able to get it. Liam, I'll ask you to touch on some of those other issues, if that's fair.
Thank you. Yes, firstly, just on Councillor Sharvin's point about the change of tenancy works. Certainly in the early stages of the new contract, there certainly was an issue in terms of the contractor understanding the quality of work that was required before we would allow a tenancy to begin. What we're now doing, Councillor Sharvin, is we're doing joint inspections with the contractor. That would be led out by John Mason, who's a very experienced maintenance officer for us, and John would know the standard that would be required. So those joint inspections for all change of tenancies in the Downpatrick area are now in place to avoid that happening. You know, so we've learned from that, and hopefully with that process in place, we'd avoid a repetition. Just turning to Councillor Hart's point about grass cutting, absolutely accepted. And I know that we had met on some issues recently in Uri, Councillor Hart, part of which related to grounds maintenance issues. I held a follow-up meeting last week with the our own contractor representative and the grounds maintenance supervisor, and we've plans in place to resolve those particular issues, and I dropped you a wee email today just on that. So again, any other examples, please let me know and we'll be glad to resolve with our grounds maintenance colleagues. In relation to some issues raised by Councillor Clark, firstly, on the CCTV programme, in my last office in North Belfast, we introduced a very comprehensive CCTV programme in Mount Vernon and New Lodge. And effectively, because of the issues in the Burnandale, I've asked for that to be replicated to the absolute same degree in Burnandale. And we've been making steady progress around that. It's been through our clearinghouse, and the scheme itself is extremely comprehensive and will definitely afford residents a high degree of safety and security in their homes. In terms of getting on site, it will take place in 2023. I don't have an exact start date at the minute, but I'll certainly update you, Councillor Clark, as we move towards that. But certainly this time next year, I'd be confident that that will be in place, subject to current sort of programme issues, you know. So that's making good progress, and I think it'll be highly beneficial. You touched upon as well the tenancy sustainment pilot that we had in the Burnandale, and as you alluded to there, the fire damage block, and with quite a run, as you know better than me, Councillor Clark, of fire damage blocks in the area. That scheme has been very successful insofar as 8 of the 9 tenancies, after the works were completed, they're all still running through the interventions provided by that. The good news is we're rolling that out within Burnandale now to 2 other blocks, and there's also a bid in for further funding where we would hope to expand it further throughout South Down and to different areas, but certainly within the Burnandale. The second blocks are starting to be looked at the minute, and colleagues Brona McGordian and Gareth Morgan are actively planning and looking at the waiting list and the rest of it. So again, we're happy to share progress on that as it develops, and really so hopefully that will happen fairly soon. Aside from that, the consultants are very active around that, so hopefully yes, I'll have firmer news on that fairly soon for you there.
Okay, folks. Councillor McMurray.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation and all the input so far. It's been pretty interesting to listen to. Just one quick question that's been raised with myself there regarding the, and I was reading through the investment plan and references, you know, appropriate to their needs and the older people's housing strategy. Just there's been a bit of an issue with a few people basically being assessed by an occupational therapist in order to get, you know, in order to get the occupational therapist to then make the assessment, to make the recommendations that allows for the works to be going out. Again, I'm not sure if that is within your remit or not. By the nods of the head, I'm guessing that it's something that is known to you, but certainly it's been, the attention has been drawn to us as well. So it's just hoping that maybe some progress or help can be afforded with that. And again, just to, as well as that, there's other constituents against Harrod as well, concerns about windows coming into the winter that they've been waiting on the on upgrades for a certain amount of time. If that could be progressed, that'd be most appreciated. Thank you, Chair.
And Councillor O'Murray.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Ronnie, for your presentation. just 2 issues. Just listening to the talk on rural housing need, on areas of higher need and how they're met and how they're identified and the whole lot. And the area that I represent is extremely rural. So Newtown, Dorsey, into Collyhanna. I was just looking down through your list there, and you know, there's a wee bit at the bottom here. It says there's no projected need for Craig and Newtown Hamilton, right? So it comes in there. And just, I suppose, as the local council there from 2014, it's a bit of an anomaly. There's a 131 housing executive stock in Newtown. They were built in the 1970s. I think I would argue that the lack of new housing in Newtown has led to young people seeking to live in private rented accommodation in Newtown and just outside Newtown. So young people who grow up in Newtown and they play football from Newtown, not there, they don't want to move too far away, so they end up staying in private rented accommodation. That whenever the latency tests are done or whatever, Newtown doesn't stand out as somewhere that needs housing. And if I look just up the road, say at Cross McGlen, I teach in Cross McGlen, I live just outside Cross McGlen now, and the amount of houses that have been built in Cross McGlen, say from the 1980s on, when I started teaching in St Patrick's Primary School in 2005, there were 220 children in the school. Today there's 508 children in the school. The primary school in Newtown would be constantly under threat of closure because there's never been a population growth, and it's just sat at a level like that. And as a result, things like the football club has never been able to grow and fulfil its potential. And I suppose we've had Liam out, and Liam's been fantastic over the past couple of years with dealing with several issues we have, because it lends itself into another completely separate issue, that when these young people are going for private rentals and then they're able to claim their housing benefit to pay for their private rentals, they're not seeking a housing executive house, which when it's unoccupied quickly leaves a vacancy, which in our experience is filled immediately by, I don't know if it's the probation service or who it is. In many of the cases, people, say, from Belfast or County Antrim are moved in who have a range of social or emotional difficulties, which invariably spill out into, it's mostly in Dungarvan Estate in Newtown, which then spill out into social difficulties, which end up with, I mean, Liam having to come out to Newtown and try and pacify and calm the whole thing down, and me as local councillor trying to calm it down. What I would suggest is that if somebody took another look at Newtown under a different light and just said, look, what is a solution to this? That if you built another housing estate in Newtown, or even a small development in Newtown, and you put families into it, and the growth in a local community and the growth in a rural community would have a knock-on effect for education in the town, would have a knock-on for sporting and cultural events in the town. And that's just Newtown. I'm only just using that as a case in point. I could say the very same about Collyhanna. I could say it to a lesser degree about Dorsey. I could say the same about Craigan. And it's just rural-proofing everything. Because I can see when I go down through it, Warren Point would stick out like a sore thumb because it's a big place, and you can always, there'll always be a demand because there's a lot of people in it. But when there's only a small stock of houses that were built 50 years ago, there's only a small group of people and there's not the same demand. So I think it's whether the people put their hand up and say, we want more housing, or if you took the chance and built the housing, people would live in them and the community would benefit from it. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay, that's me.
Okay, so I realised actually I didn't answer the question that was asked for previous councillor about the grants programme and contractors, and he referred to it as select builder scheme, but I know what he means. So and actually I want to come back because his councillor also asked about grants and older people and grants. Okay, so kind of my same answer for both. So the grants programme essentially that we run, whether it's disabled facilities grants or grants for people who need adaptations to their homes in the private sector, or indeed any other type of grants in the private sector, are the policy for that. Those grants programmes essentially rest with the department, and it's our job to be the grant funder. So the grant comes to us and we effectively administer the grants. So we don't design the scheme, unfortunately. And essentially in all of those cases, it is really, it's led by the individual. So they apply to us. And sometimes in the application, they need an occupational therapist report. And there has definitely been challenges associated with that because there are not enough occupational therapists. And often people have to wait a very long time. So that's the first issue. We've actually set up a housing and health team to try and help that and bring a bit more, I suppose, speed the process up a bit. So we're doing our best on that. But either which way, what it requires is the individual, the applicant, to needs to essentially to apply for the grant. We assess it and we let them know what they're eligible for. But the customer or the applicant has to procure the contractor themselves. And that is the way the policy is designed. And my own personal view, and I've said this, is I think, you know, I think in the future we need a policy that doesn't place quite as much onus on the customer, because they are now navigating a very complicated market and nobody can get contractors. And so it is a very, very difficult market. So we are looking at this. We're actively discussing it with the department. And I think we would certainly want to improve upon it. But that, unfortunately, is the way the policy was designed and developed. So everything that we can do to either shorten the process, whether it's for older people, by putting a new team in place and getting occupational therapists looking at it, we will do. And we are also, where we can, we use as many other partner organisations to work with applicants and work their way through those grants programmes. But I accept fully, at the moment, the way the market is, it is a difficult job for any applicant to work their way through that. To answer the question about the list, so again, we don't endorse and we don't recommend any set of contractors. It would not be appropriate for us to do so. What we simply do is make available on our website a list of organisations or contractors. And that does change over time, and we make that clear and we update it on a fairly regular basis. But as soon as we update it, effectively, you can imagine it's out of date. Like any document you put on the website, it can get out of date fairly quickly. So I get asked that question a lot, and I will always say it's not an endorsement. We simply make a list available, and customers and applicants work their way through it. I'll let Liam come in on some of the other questions, or John, but I just want to come back to your point about rural need. And I think your example was a classic example of the kinds of conversations that effectively I could, you know, in every council chamber, that explanation is given. And it's a really, really good one. And effectively, that's really the problem that you set out is really what we're trying to achieve through community planning. Because what we're essentially saying is exactly the point. If you wait for people to say, I want to live there, then actually, we're getting it the wrong way around. That really what we need to be doing is taking a place shaping and a place making approach, which is to say, what would need look like in a generation's time? And so that's really what the housing symposiums have been about, sitting down and saying, let's look at the housing authority and at the planning authority, let's sit together and look at how need and demand is going to change over time, and how we want to do that as I say, the housing authority and the planning authority. So that will take some time, but I think we've seen some good successes already locally in terms of identifying how we grow demand and how we grow need. But those latent demand tests are really important, because so often, in fact, I was at another council meeting earlier this week where a councillor asked me a question about latent demand tests and said, you're simply raising people's expectations, it's not fair. And I think we had to go back and say, well, actually, if we don't do it, then we never get to a point where people say, no, I'd like to live there at some point in the future. So, you know, I think I would rather be on the receiving end of criticism for doing it than not doing it. I think it's better that we do it. Yeah. Liam, I'm sorry, I probably not covered all the issues there, but
thank you. Just reiterate, you know, the support of councillors in terms of local office has been excellent, as was the case in relation to Newton Hamilton, some sort of difficult issues, but working in partnership with statutory colleagues and the elected reps, you know, it certainly works, you know, in terms of trying to resolve issues in the short term. So the elected reps' comments are very much appreciated. Thank you.
Okay, folks, I don't see any more. There's no other councillors looking in, is that correct? Okay. Well, folks, thank you very much for coming along tonight, and hopefully our close working relationship will continue. And thanks for the work that you and the teams are doing every day. I'd like to reiterate what others have said in relation to the local staff and the support we get, Liam and his team, and Yuri, and obviously in the Down office as well. So thank you very much for your continued support and your efforts. Thank you. Stay home.